It's the CougarFan.com Rise and Shout Podcast, episode 241. I am your host, Adam Mangum. I'm joined in this episode by Matt Brown of SB Nation to discuss the recent developments in Big 12 expansion. How many teams will they add? Which teams will they add? And what does the timeline look like before we'll know if the Cougars are in or out? This week's show is sponsored by my fantasy novel, Peak Crosser. Reviewers are calling it a unique story, and the characters are wonderful. Check it out on Amazon.com. This is the Rise and Shout podcast. Check us out on Facebook at facebook.com/riseandshout. Get all your Cougar news at cougarfan.com. And listen to me and Matt Brown right now. Welcoming to the cougarfan.com Rise and Shout podcast, Matt Brown, a man on campus for SB Nation covering Ohio State college football and sometimes BYU. Matt, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, thanks for having me. It's nice to have an opportunity to discuss something, some big college football news this time of year that has nothing to do with the police blotter.
Yes, thank goodness for that. But BYU Twitter and fandom has lit up over the past week and a half. Of course, my brother and I recorded right before the Big 12 announced that they're likely going to expand, which was unfortunate timing for us. But like a lot of people, I thought nothing was going to come of that. Call on Tuesday was going to be more of the same, Matt. But did something change between the news a few weeks ago when it seemed like there wasn't much in the air? Or was this just a matter of the Big 12 kind of kept it under wraps and we just didn't realize where this news was going to come from?
Yeah, I'm with you. Leading up to that call, I think along with most other national-ish writers, I was expecting more of the Big 12 kind of kicking the can a little bit rather than something really substantive coming from that press conference. What really changed, because something did change, was the announcement of the ACC's new television agreement with ESPN. The ACC will be getting their own conference network, just like the SEC and the Big Ten, that will start in 2019. They're starting a digital-only service, I believe, this season. And the big change there is that extends their grant of rights for their television agreement through the 2030s. There were some teams, particularly Texas, within the Big 12 that were hesitant to expand now because it felt like that would remove some of their flexibility come 2024, 2025, when all of these television rights agreements expire. There were some in the Big 12 that thought they had a puncher's chance of being able to go after a Florida State or a Clemson. With this grant of rights extension, that really proves that, hey, your conference expansion candidates are who they are. That pool is not going to appreciably change over the next several years. There's going to be a ton of television uncertainty moving forward into the 2020s. So if you have a contract that gives you an enormous amount of short-term money by expanding, it makes a lot of sense to go grab your money while you can. And that appears to be what the Big 12 is doing.
Yeah, it's a big change, and obviously they had some consultants that they brought in that gave them some ideas. So from your perspective now, if you had to guess between two and four teams, not the actual teams but the number, do you think they expand by two, or do you think they take what it sounded like the consultants were recommending, they actually go four teams bigger and go big, up to a 14-team league?
So I don't think anything is settled at this point, but from the people that I've talked to, and certainly from what I've read, it seems that a four-team expansion is more likely. If you're from the perspective of the Big 12, remember, you get the same amount of money from your television partners for every team that you expand by, no matter who that team is. You get the same check for BYU as you do for Temple or Tulane. And really, outside of maybe the top one or two candidates in this pool, I don't think there's a ton of separation between Team 3 and maybe Team 8. That you're looking at from this kind of 10-team consideration pool here. So if you're the Big 12, the more teams you expand by, the greater chance you have of somebody evolving into a perennially strong program once you give them an extra $20, $25 million, and you're getting more money by doing so. And so that would appear to be the more prudent choice. We'll see what actually happens, but I think there's more momentum towards a four-team expansion right now.
Well, so we've seen already some political posturing, the governor of Texas weighing in on expansion candidates and Texas weighing in, the University of Texas, on the potential University of Houston expansion candidate. I followed the expansions of the Big Ten and the Pac-12 pretty closely.
when those went down. And there was some political posturing, but this is kind of at a different level, Matt, than what we've seen. And this isn't the first time. This happened when the Big 12 became the Big 12 after the Southwest Conference fell apart. There was a lot of these states and universities getting involved. Do you think, from what you've read and heard, that this is likely to be pretty political? Or do you think the political parties have said what they needed, and in the end, the Big 12 is going to do what they think is the best overall for their conference going forward?
I think it's going to be enormously political. And I think these conference changes are often political. Like, you know, obviously, I think a lot of BYU fans know about Governor Ann Richards and Baylor and some of the political, you know, machinations that happened the last time the Big 12 had this big alignment. But it's certainly not unprecedented. Governors from Virginia, from West Virginia, from Georgia have been involved in some of these conversations. And it's a good reminder that while, you know, television and college football represent really big money to universities, you know, like legitimately really big money, it's still nothing compared to some of these other construction or research projects. So I think there's a couple of different possible reasons why there's been this coordinated effort around Texas officials to kind of coalesce behind Houston. I'm not 100% sure we know exactly why, but the most likely seems to be some kind of horse trading that would allow the University of Texas to then expand its gigantic research campus that they're trying to build in Houston, which was receiving a lot of political opposition from the University of Houston system. You know, for as all the really practical reasons why a Big 12 institution would not want Houston in there, research money is a little bit bigger than television money when you look at this gigantic campus, and so that might be part of what's going on. I would not be surprised if there were politicians from Tennessee, politicians from Florida, politicians from some of these other states that try to get involved in some way. Whether it'll be effective, I don't really know. But because there's so much money and so much prestige involved, you know, there's going to be some weird behind the scenes things here, because this is a weird sport.
Yeah, yeah. And heck, the governor of Utah jumped in as well on Twitter to voice his opinion. So, like you said, there's always
thank you for supporting SB Nation, Governor. We appreciate it.
So we're gonna see what goes down. Now, I mean, I'm gonna just tell you my perspective, and Matt, you tell me if I'm crazy or not, because there seems to be, and you know BYU fans fairly well, there seems to be the optimistic kind that think BYU's in the Big 12 no matter what, and there seems to be these pessimists that think BYU, because of Sunday play or just the religious association with the school, is not likely. I'm in the optimist camp. I don't think, if they add four teams, I don't think there's any way BYU doesn't get in, just based on football, money, potential, all those things that they talked about as expansion candidates. Is that a crazy perspective? Do you think BYU's chances are significantly less than that, or do you think there are reasons to be optimistic about BYU getting in?
I don't think that's crazy at all. Like, I think that, you know, from where I am right now, my thinking would be I would be more optimistic than not about BYU getting in, if nothing else, as a football-only member. I think there's definitely some particular schools within the conference that are pro-BYU. It would appear that Oklahoma is one of those. I've heard that West Virginia is okay with this, which would be significant given that they would be the school that would potentially be impacted most by travel. If we're looking at just a cold, dispassionate evaluation of the quality and depth of your athletic department and some of these, you know, fan-based metrics that the Big 12 said was important to them, you know, and you can look at the article the governor tweeted that we had written, I think the data is pretty clear. BYU is at the top of that group by just about, whether you want to look at football consistency or stadium infrastructure or tradition or digital footprint or any of those other things. It's clear that there are some political, institutional, cultural reasons why BYU is not a great fit. There's going to be some objections that they're going to have to overcome. Otherwise, I think BYU would already be in the conference. But given where they are compared to everybody else, given what's important to the conference, I would be surprised at this point. Granted, a ton can change in the next 3 or 4 weeks. But at this point, I would expect BYU to be involved in some capacity.
So one of the things that's come up that I've thought about a little bit, you talked about the cultural fit, which I agree I think that's the reason historically they haven't been in. But you talked about the last time they did this in Baylor and some of those machinations. Baylor's been kind of a black eye for the conference in the past few years. Lots of scandals and different things. BYU, I mean, scandals there are about people having beards and a few other things. And there's been some stuff in the news recently, but I mean, do you think that is a plus for BYU, is that you're not likely to have some of the stuff that's been going on at Baylor and maybe some other schools? Or do you think that doesn't really factor in as something the Big 12 is going to look at?
You know, it's funny you mention that. I don't know if I would look at any kind of comparison to Baylor as a positive. And it's funny because some media outlets, I believe the Oklahoman wrote something about this, are trying to draw a couple of parallels between the situation at Baylor and some of the stories that, you know, you saw in the Salt Lake Tribune or, you know, some other outlets a couple of months ago about the honor code and BYU's ability to follow through sexual assault investigations. And I would you know, look at those two things. I would say it's very clear there are some super important substantive differences between those two cases. It does not appear BYU has tried to cover anything up. BYU's situation has not involved athletes. There hasn't been any collusion. It's not like this gigantic institutional failure. But if you read the Pepper Hamilton report, and you find that Pepper Hamilton, or rather just a statement of facts, that is not an actual report, it pointed out that Baylor's strict honor code created a culture that created incentives for people to not come forward about these incidents. Well, that's awfully similar to some of the things that have been reported at BYU. And Tom Holmoe, even, I believe, yesterday, with ESPN, talked about how, you know, he's going to have to, that's going to be part of their conversation, trying to reassure these institutions. I don't know that, you know, BYU going up there and saying, like, listen, we're the only team that's won a national championship and hasn't come over any kind of legitimate NCAA sanction. We run pretty squeaky clean programs. You know, that's a positive, but I don't think that's a positive that outweighs some of their other questions and objections are going to have to be worked through during those conversations. I don't think anything's insurmountable, but there's definite things that will have to be worked through.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So let's move on to other candidates. We talked about the University of Houston. Obviously, there have been, for now the last couple of years, it's been the narrative, Matt, has been BYU and Cincinnati are the front runners. Cincinnati, because apparently West Virginia wants them as a travel partner, etc. If you were giving odds right now, and let's keep BYU out of it, to the other schools that are being mentioned, I mean, do you think there's any other given in there that you, I shouldn't say given, but a high probability? Or do you think, like you said, 3 through 8 you think is pretty similar? Is it Cincinnati that's number 2 or Houston? And where do you see some of those other programs falling?
So I think pretty consistently said this that people have asked me about it before the Big 12 announcement over the last couple of months. I think the odds-on favorite for any spot, and from whom I've talked to, I still believe this is true, is Cincinnati. Not only does Cincinnati have a prior athletic history with West Virginia, and not obviously there's a huge travel partner situation there. They're another school in the Eastern time zone, which gives the conference some flexibility with TV slots and remove some of that disadvantage for West Virginia. As an athletic department that is very similar to BYU's in terms of peer, it's a little bit of a smaller stadium, but strong Olympic sports, strong football and men's basketball. But most importantly, it also gives you a toehold into a really, really strong recruiting ground. Ohio is a state that produces a ton of really great high school football players, exponentially more than Utah. And probably the most prominent metro area for that is Cincinnati. Like Cincinnati, that metro area, that's a tiny chunk of the percentage of Chicago, for example. But it produces more Division I caliber football players than Chicago does. Well, way more than New York City. And so, if you're a Big 12 school and you hire an assistant coach that has some connections to Cincinnati, and you're coming into Cincinnati every other year, you're going to be able to start to be competitive for some of those kids. You know, not the kids that Ohio State's getting, but the kids at Nebraska or Michigan State or Kentucky or some of these other places. And that's something that really nobody else but the Virginia schools can offer. And from some of the documents we've recovered, Cincinnati has been not at all subtle in letting everybody know right. They really badly want to be in the Big 12. Like, they basically haven't stopped hustling for this spot since, like, 2011. So So I would put them at first. I would put Houston at second, given some of these political changes. And I put BYU at third. And then from there, I don't really know. I don't think there's a ton of difference, with, you know, in terms of odds between Memphis and UConn. I would probably put those two as the favorites of the fourth spot, and then maybe not sleep on Colorado State. I haven't really heard anything to indicate there's much momentum behind the Florida schools. And then the big sleeper, which is one that I think college football fans will laugh at, but is really not as remote a possibility as you might think, is Tulane. And then from there, I haven't really heard anything about anybody else.
Oh, there's some San Diego State fans that think they're in, Matt. They want everybody to look at San Diego State.
They're not even applying.
Yeah, I know.
I'm sorry, any San Diego State fans, but like it, you know them, SMU, BYU. I mean, it's not BYU, excuse, Boise State. Like some of these other institutions that, like, I think fans have floated. They're not in the conversation.
Yeah, I'd agree, and there's good reasons for that. You mentioned Tulane. I don't think it's as far fetched as other folks would say. Obviously, football power is not there, but there's a lot of other factors that would be a plus for them. So Matt, timeline wise, that's the next questions everyone is having. I mean, it was floated that they would start this expansion, that teams could enter the conference as soon as 2017, which is soon. So, you know, we're only talking about 12 months from now. It's possible that four teams could be looking at down the barrel of their first Big 12 season. What is the timeline for this? Do you think the Big 12, after dragging their feet for years, is going to suddenly in the next few weeks, we're going to be hearing announcements? Or do you think, knowing the Big 12 and how they've operated in the past, that they're going to be, you know, dragging this out for months?
You know, it's hard to really definitively say anything about where these kind of administrative processes work, because, as you know, nobody has flip-flopped more administratively than the Big 12 over the past couple of years. I will say this. So on the call and in a couple of follow-up conversations with a few other writers, they did indicate that they don't want to hew to a specific timeline, but they do think 2017 to 2018, like that football, that athletic season, is possible. I wrote something a couple of days ago detailing the exit fees and some of the like financial logistics of doing that. It would be difficult because there's a $10 million exit fee and you have to provide like 27 months notice to leave the American, which is where the bulk of these candidates are coming from. And if your athletic department is only $50 million, I think that's around where Cincinnati is. Certainly some of the other schools are smaller than that. Like, that's a big chunk of change, especially because you're probably going to have to pay more than that to leave early. It might be a $20 million exit fee, which is what West Virginia had to pay to leave the Big East early. I imagine the Big 12 or some corporate sponsors may help negotiate that, and some schools are going to have an easier time navigating those financial trickiness than others. You know, BYU, obviously, would have a much easier way of extracting themselves from those kind of agreements.
Yeah.
In terms of their decision-making process, you know, you can probably find people on Twitter who would tell you that, like, so-and-so's in or this is done. I really don't think anything is a done deal yet. I think anybody who tells you that, like, so-and-so's a lock is probably not super connected or is just kind of, you know, pontificating, because really one of the big things that's going to make the determination here is going to be the financial negotiation. Who's willing to take the lowest opening bid? Because the less money that somebody takes as their initial partial share, that's the more money that's going to go to Kansas State or Iowa State these first couple of years, and that has to be negotiated.
Yeah,
I would expect something a little bit more concrete by the first couple of weeks of football season. It would not surprise me if the Big 12 invites specific schools to Dallas to make pitches or kind of formalizes that a little bit. But I think they know they don't want to drag this on through football season. The longer we're talking about this, the less we're talking about Oklahoma or TCU as potential playoff candidates, the more kind of oxygen we're sucking away from the Big 12 on the field. And I think they recognize that. So I don't think this is going to drag on until, like, throughout all of football season. I think that, you know, we'll see some actual concrete updates, you know, potentially even before then. But, like, you know, this isn't done yet, and the situation is still awfully fluid.
Yeah, it certainly is. Well, we'll get you out on one last question. Now you really have to pull out your crystal ball, Matt, because I'm going to have you project in the future. The TV contracts until the ACC re-upped a couple weeks ago, those contracts all look like they're in 7 or 8 years. They're could be a whole new round of conference movement as the TV contracts came to the close. This new ACC agreement, maybe Big 12 expansion, is quieting some of that. But let's look forward in 10 years' time. Are we looking at another massive, you know, in these super conferences and one of the P5, which everyone can kind of point it at, the Big 12 is the one most likely to disappear? Or do you think what's happening now is fairly stable, and that 10 years from now there will be five power conferences just like there are today, and maybe the playoff has changed and become bigger, but the structure that we see forming now will be the same structure that we see a decade from now?
I'm not anticipating a truly massive realignment like we saw around 2011, in part because of some of these set of television agreements, in part because I think that there's going to be a little bit of a slowdown in terms of TV money blowing up, and it's becoming less tied to your local market, which makes expanding for the sake of being near a big city less important. We're already seeing that now. I think the single most likely change that we're going to see from a power conference is that either Texas or Oklahoma may very well still end up in the Big Ten or the SEC. And you'll notice throughout these conversations that Texas has been careful to kind of leak to Austin-based reporters that they are not interested in extending the Big 12 grant of rights. They're not willing to make a commitment for another 20 years here. And at the end of this TV deal, the Big Ten makes more sense for Texas institutionally. Like, you know, Texas is a gigantic AAU research institution. They don't really have a lot academically or culturally in common with Kansas State or Oklahoma State or Baylor. And they do with Big Ten institutions. And that, you know, and given that they could jump there and make another $15 million a year from television, that would be something that would be compelling. Or jumping to the SEC, where you're going to have better athletics, would be compelling. Oklahoma is going to have the same situation. Those are schools that are going to have options. And no matter what the Big 12 does, they will be able to make more money in those other two conferences. The Big 12 can't expand itself into a peer financially from those two. So that, I think, is possible. I would give even money odds to either of those teams being somewhere else come 2024, 2025. But does that necessarily constitute a massive realignment? Does that change the Pac-12's alignment? Does that get rid of the Big 12 as a conference? I don't think so. And I don't. If when I talk to university presidents or I talk to athletic directors and talk about super conferences or, you know, 16-team playoffs or whatever, it's not something that people look at as a goal or something that's even necessarily inevitable. So I would slow down that. But we'll see. If I knew exactly what was going to happen with TV by 2025, I would not be writing about sports for a living. I'd be making a heck of a lot more money.
Yeah, I know. I'm looking for that kind of insight too, or get your DeLorean and come back with all the odds of what all is going to happen. So, but we'll see. Yeah. Well, Matt, we appreciate your insight and in coming on and talking about Big 12. Of course, we'll encourage people to follow you on Twitter at MattSBN and all the writing that you do for Vanquish the Foe, a site we used to be affiliated with. They do great work there, and also for SB Nation in general on college sports. Anything else you'd like to promote?
I think if you follow me there, I do a lot of writing about Ohio State and the Big Ten.
We just ignore that.
No, yeah. That's fine. All the Ohio State people are like, why is this guy talking about BYU? I don't understand. Like, Big Ten Media Day starts today. I'll probably do some writing about that. And then I do a fair amount of work for SBNation.com and supporting all of the SBNation team sites. So I am around, and I love all of your teams. Please don't write me angry emails again.
I'm sure they will anyway, Matt. It's a fan's perceived right. Well, thanks for coming on again, and we'll have you on again sometime soon.
Okay. All right. That sounds good. Take care.